At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This is ESPN 97.5, brought to you by Zada Jewelers.
KFNC 97.9 HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston, a Gal Media station.
The Killer Bee!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I am Branham, it is Brian behind the glass, and it is a Labor Day edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5, and as appreciation to Labor Day, pay homage to Labor Day, we're going to labor for you. We're going to labor for you, and there's a good thing. There's nothing else to do. Whether you're probably not working, if you are, we'll take you through your day. Astros don't play baseball today, and let's see how many people we can rile up. Ooh. Astros don't play baseball today until 6:05, so you got nothing to do for the next 3 hours but to listen to the Killer Bees. Astros at 6:05, first game in Cincinnati. Lots to get to today. It is the first Monday after a college football weekend, so what do we believe after the college football weekend? Although there is a game tonight, Bill O'Brien kicks off his Boston College tenure against Florida State. He'll be ticked off as they take on Boston College. We'll get to a Mailbag Monday at 4:30, and then Texans-Colts on Sunday. 6 days away from the Houston Texans season kicking off. There's an NFL game Thursday, NFL game on Friday. Cannot wait. We'll also get to the Kyle Tucker news in a little bit. All is well right now. All is well right now with Kyle Tucker, but Chandler Rome has reported that there was indeed a fracture on the shin of Kyle Tucker. He had three sources tell him that. I imagine that'll be part of our bad in good, bad, and ugly. But as we always do on a Monday, good, bad, ugly from the Astros weekend. And we would be remiss if we didn't start with the good after the Astros sweep the Kansas City Royals.
Blankers. What a great 4-game series, 5 in a row, the way they've played against this upper-level competition, again, playing to the level and just playing so well, how can you not start with the starting pitching? I mean, the starting pitching was phenomenal. The worst you get is Blanco shutout ball for 5 innings, but you get Brown going 6 2/3. You get 2 7-inning performances from Kikuchi and Fromber. Fromber and Brown go no-nos going into their last inning. Phenomenal outing. They gave up 1 earned run, I think, in their last 30 2/3 innings. The starting pitching was lights out.
Yeah, starting pitching was fantastic, and you can go up and down the rotation with how good everybody was. Rennell Blanco is not the most economical starting pitcher. I don't think he can be with his stuff. Now, his breaking ball and his changeup are good, but I think he has to be a guy who lives on the margins. He has to be right on the edge. He's got to be right on the corner, because if he's over the plate, he's going to get hit. Mm-hmm. I think that's why he has high pitch counts. I think that's why he walks a good amount of guys, is because he has to live on the corners. His stuff doesn't play in the middle of the zone like a Hunter Brown's can, like a Framber Valdez's can, like a Spencer Arrighetti's can, like a Yusei Kikuchi can. Rennell Blanco has to live on the corner. So I think that's why we see his pitch count go up. I think that's why we see, the walk total up. But I'll take 5 shutout innings from Rennell Blanco every single time. If he throws 100 pitches to get through 5 innings, but it's 5 shutout innings, cool.
No doubt.
That's fine.
I think the mystery becomes, and I don't know, if you can pinpoint it and say he's not completely warmed up or whatever. He normally struggles the most in the first inning or inning and a half, where, he's really kind of missing the zone. The pitches get up there. He gets a pitch count up. He walks a couple guys early, and then he kind of settles in. Once he gets his rhythm and he settles in, then it's a much better scenario in terms of the pitch count. But you're right. I mean, he can't afford to dabble in the middle of the plate, but sometimes, whether he gets too cute or depending on the strike zone the umpire's giving him, that's where you got to live with the fact that he's probably not going to ever give you like 7+ innings in a game the way, he did early in the season.
No. Well, I think he has it in his bag. I think the stars have to align for him. Now, I think the thing that we kind of lose sight of when it comes to Ronel Blanco, you know, he still leads the Astros in ERA. You know, he's still second in the American League in ERA. So this guy's still a weapon for you. He also leads the American League in hits per nine, which again goes to the fact that he's hard to hit because he's living on the edges, living on the corners. But Ronel Blanco, really good to see that start from him. You say Kikuchi. So good. Again, seven innings, struck out 12 in that game against a good lineup, although much better hitting team at home than they are the road. Stats would back that up. I think there's some cameras in the fountains. Yusei Kikuchi with the Astros in six starts, Astros are undefeated in those six starts, by the way, is 3-0 with a 2.57 ERA. He has a sub-1 whip. His strikeouts per nine is over 12. Yusei Kikuchi in his first six starts has been the best pitcher acquired at the deadline. And it blows me away because the Yusei Kikuchi for the last 2 months prior to becoming an Astro was a tomato can. Like, the fact that the Astros are getting this out of a guy who was getting roughed up for about 6 to 12 starts prior in Toronto is unbelievable.
I mean, when you start talking about just the totality of everything, you're right. Starting with Kikuchi and the fact that we did not know what to expect, but we certainly didn't expect this. And to be undefeated in every start that he's given you since he's joined the squad is one thing. But the way that he has just kind of dialed it in to be knocking guys down left and right with strikeouts has been absolutely phenomenal. And you take it a step further, their 2.51 ERA in August, best in baseball. 185, as you mentioned, part of what you had mentioned, 185 opponents batting average against, second lowest in a month by any team in Major League history. Cleveland in 1968, the last time you saw what the Astros pitchers are doing. The fact that you can go top to bottom and you're basically talking about a guaranteed Hall of Famer as the guy you worry about the most in a six-man rotation in Justin Verlander, the guy throwing today, because everybody else is just shoving every time they get the baseball.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing how good this rotation has been. One through six, and then Fromber. We got to mention Fromber because Fromber's a machine. Fromber's going to back his way into a top five AL Cy Young finish yet again. He's been super consistent, really ever since he had that blow up against the Angels and Joe George called for his head and wanted him traded. Ever since then, he's been fantastic. Let's pull up Fromber's numbers since Joe George wanted Fromber Valdez traded. 17 starts for Fromber. He himself is 10-4 in those 17 starts with a 2.65 ERA. The team is 13-4 in those 17 starts. He's been one of the best pitchers in baseball since Joe George called for Fromber to be traded.
Yeah, you could take it a step further, and I was looking at some stuff this morning. Since 2020, he leads all pitchers in wins with 58, fourth best ERA at 3.17. And he leads all of baseball in postseason wins, innings, and strikeouts since 2020. So, yeah, there were the hiccups. Yes, we've talked about the mental lapses, whether it be fielding or it be just when he gets, you know, frustrated from time to time. But you can't discount just how good his stuff is. And when he is – the other night, I mean, he basically was throwing any pitch he wanted on any count, and it just didn't matter. The change of speeds, even on the difference – the variation in speed on his breaking pitches – and just locating it everywhere he wanted it to go. It was like he just knew what the next pitch was going to be, and he didn't care if they were looking for it or not. He knew his stuff was going to translate. It's fun to watch when he's on the hill because he is in total control right now, and he is on quite a roll.
Yeah, I think he's one of the best pitchers in baseball, quite frankly. And whenever he's got the curveball going, when he can get that over for a strike, he's getting swing and miss on that. He might be the best pitcher in baseball, and that's not hyperbolic. That's how good Fromber Valdez has been. And really, Fromber Valdez has kind of been that guy for a couple of years now. Fromber this year, 3.11 ERA. Last year, didn't have a great second half. I think he was upset about the All-Star game, but still 3.45 ERA. Year before that, 2.82. Year before that, 3.14. COVID year, 3.57. Like, over the last 5 years, he has been one of the most consistent pitchers in all of baseball. Does he have his moments here and there? Yes. But would you take that kind of consistency? Of course. 10 times over. Other than the starters, what else you got? Goods.
I mean, when you start looking at Yordan at home finally, breaking out with the long balls, the power numbers, getting hits. He was 6-for-15 over the weekend, over the four-game series. And we know how important and vital he is to this offense. And it was such a mystery why he was getting such ridiculous splits from road to home. But to not only settle in at home, but to hit the bombs he was hitting, you know, to hit almost 500 for the weekend. That's something that you got to have. And when he's hitting like that, I mean, everybody feeds off of it, but that's what drives your lineup.
Yeah. I don't know if it's like he gets bored at home or what, but it's kind of like, hey, he can turn it on whenever he wants. Maybe he's got the family, you know, the family's wearing on him at home, you know. He's sleeping in the doghouse or something because he gets on the road.
The first home run the other day, the Astros Twitter posted it.
His son
called the first home run. And let's not forget he got robbed of one. I mean, he hit what he thought was another home run, and the right fielder for Kansas City went way over the wall to bring that thing back.
Yesterday?
No, over the course of the weekend. Was it Saturday?
I don't remember that one. Yes. It might have been Saturday.
I think it was Saturday, but the right fielder went a good elbow above the wall in right field to bring it back.
I was working on Saturday, so maybe it was that one. Yeah. Jordan, 30 homers for the fourth year in a row, by the way. He is a machine. He said he did it for Yuli. What a good guy doing it for his former countryman. I guess it's still his countryman, Yuli Gurriel. I think it's a great time for Myers to go on maternity leave. He was 1-for-15 in the series. Go have a baby. Go have a baby. Congratulations on the baby. And then maybe try to get out of your head and come back with a little bit of offensive game. Now, of course, you're going to play center field because you're the best defensive center fielder the Astros have. But let's try to find a little offense while you're away. Just a little bit. A little bit of offense from Myers would go a long way.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice. And at least you know that people will actually probably miss you by the time you come back because Chaz is your replacement and Chaz is going to play center field. So at least you probably won't have someone setting high standards for you to match when you come back. But it would be nice to kind of get your head out of your rear end a little bit offensively and snap out of it because of the fact that we know that, I mean, look what Ben Gamble's done since he's become an Astro. Yeah. I mean, the guy is just, regardless of what he hasn't been able to accomplish since he came in pretty highly touted when he started his career, dude has been nails for you since he became the Astros.
He's always been an okay hitter. Not to this point, but it's always been like fringy. Mm-hmm. It's been fringy. King of all twitches says Hayward can play center field. I think you can get away with that with ground ball pitchers. I don't think you can get away with that when a guy like Justin Verlander's pitching gives up a lot of fly balls. But I do think that's in the play. I think you'll see it actually while Myers is away at some point.
Yeah, look, he's a good enough athlete to do it. You saw him. I mean, basically, no one calls off Altuve, and he came running in from right field and almost caught it on the fringe of the infield to show that, you know, he can cover some ground. You're right, it's a different story when you're having to cover the gaps and cover him out there. But it should be interesting to see how they play, you know, how he decides to play center field with Jake out and see how much run Chaz actually gets.
All right, what else do we have? What other goods do we have before we...
Hayward's first game. I mean, Hayward's first game, you needed it. The extra base hit, the double scores two.
And that was Thursday.
Okay, but it's still part of the series.
Yeah, but we talked about it.
I'm just saying for the whole series. I mean, I thought that everybody pitched Bobby Witt Jr. fantastic with the exception of Hector Neris. Hector Neris was responsible for the two home runs, but everybody else was basically shutting down Bobby Witt Jr. when he was on quite a heater.
Yeah, whenever he's playing in away games, he's got buzzers in the fountains. Things are going on. Any other goods, Brian?
Sorry if I missed something that you've already covered, but
obviously
the starting pitching was fantastic, and then both Yainer Diaz and Jeremy Pena had a really good offensive weekends, hits in every game. I believe Diaz scored a run in every game. Pena had 5 RBI. It was a good weekend.
Angels take the series from Seattle. That's my final good.
That was a good.
Seattle lost a series to the Angels in a pennant race.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Well,
how does that happen? Seattle, where are you at? Where are all the trolls at? Pierre?
They were 10 games up. They're now 6 back.
The level of just flat-out anger with Mariners fans and just going, quoting all the different things about the Tigers and the Angels, and they lost, I think it was like 8 of 9 to the Tigers. And now that they've got the same kind of streak going against the Angels, and listening to the Mariners broadcast yesterday to watch them just implode over and over again, they got so excited at one point when J-Rod hit one down the line. He's like, oh, there it is. We're back in the game. The left fielder caught. He's like, or maybe not.
Yeah.
And they just it was so fun to watch them lose to the Angels.
Yeah, love it. Love it. Now, they started series against Oakland.
Service certainly didn't help.
No.
Same results.
Fired the other interim manager catcher dude that they got. All right, 713-780-ESPN. I believe coming up at 4 o'clock, Mailbag Monday, you can ask us whatever you want. We'll talk some Texans coming up on Sunday as well. But Kyle Tucker, that fracture. We'll get to the bad of the Astros weekend. Get your thoughts, too. 713-780-ESPN. HRP listener line, 713. 713- 713-780-3776. On Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. On YouTube at ESPN Houston. On Twitter, ESPN975. Blankers at Pac-Man Joel. Brian at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Bees on ESPN975 and ESPN925. It's me again to tell you about my favorite sports book and casino. That's BetUS.com. Football is back, and it's time to get in on the action. I've been winning you some money, some money that's coming up this football season, and of course I'm doing that at BetUS because I only endorse one sportsbook and casino. That's BetUS. If you want a game plan to win this season, check out BetUS. BetUS went large for you this season with a huge offer, a 125% sign-up bonus on your first three deposits. Not your first, not your second, all three. That's right, 125% bonus on your first three deposits. BetUS offers value other sportsbooks simply cannot. Gambler's insurance, crypto bonuses, casino bonus. Plus, they have all the products you need. How about competitive odds? We love the parlays. We love the live betting. Odds boost. It's like cheating. Prop betting. That's always fun, too. When you're ready to lay down your bet, give your bet an edge. Why not combine your sign-up bonus with knowledge? Get that knowledge with expert analysis, picks, and predictions on all major sports on their very own BetUS TV. Get started at BetUS.com or give them a call. 1-800-MY-BET-US. That's BetUS, where the game begins.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Good, bad, and ugly. Went over the good. What's the bad? 713-780-3776. Lead story there, of course, is Kyle Tucker. We'll get to that in a moment. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRP listener line. Walt, do you have any good or bad from the Astros weekend?
Well, yeah, I've got some good and I got some bad. The good was the Astros, especially the pitching staff. Staff pitched to a 150 ERA, and the starters were really, really good. Kikuchi was the only starter even to give up a run. And this backed up an offense, which was pretty much his league average. Hit 250 for the series, a little under 700 OPS, a little above. Now, the bad is the Royals, of course. Now, starting back when they played Cleveland last Wednesday, it's hard to believe if they had won last Wednesday, they would have been in the lead in the Central. They blew a 5-2 lead. Cleveland scored five runs to win that game 7-5. And since that seventh inning stretch, Cleveland has been outscored 28-9. And of course, that's even a bad football game.
Mm-hmm. All right, appreciate the call, Walt. Yeah, I think the AL Central is a little overrated.
I just like the guards to lose Central. Just a little, keep losing for a little bit longer, try and lock up that two seed, that bye minimum, and do the Astros one of the final solids that they need down the stretch. That would be helpful. But you're right. I mean, I think. Look, in a lot of ways, I think all three teams have overachieved to some level. At Minnesota, obviously, the injuries have hurt them a lot, but with Cleveland and Kansas City, I think they're good teams that are going to get better. Cleveland's always that kind of team. I think Kansas City has the chance to be really good down the road, but I don't fear any of the teams in that division.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully that doesn't come back to bite us.
Right.
knock on wood. Some of the numbers you hear with the Astros pitching staff, whether it's like the last 3 months, the last month, you mentioned the one where they're second best, like in baseball history, last time it had been done in the 60s, Cleveland, they weren't the guards then. 60s is what I said, I think. 713-780-ESPN. Good, bad, ugly. 713-780-3776. Keith from LA. Yeah, the Astros beat some good teams finally, but it's football, all capital letters, season now. Put the Astros on the back burner until the playoffs at CJ's town now. Okay, Keith from LA, stop texting us. 713-780-3776. Now, to me, the bad is this stuff coming out with Kyle Tucker. The good news is that maybe he's going to play soon. He's in Cincinnati. I think that there's a little bit of I think they might be disagreeing a little bit, Kyle Tucker and the Houston Astros, because some of the stuff that's coming out about, like, do they want him to play? And we'll get to the shin fracture in a moment. Kyle Tucker doesn't want to go on a rehab. The Astros have been very adamant that he's going to need a rehab stand, a rehab trip assignment. You also have had like Joe Espada, like, eh, I don't know when he's going to be ready to play. I don't know if he's going to be on the trip. And Tucker's like, I want to be on the trip. This quote from the Houston Chronicle. This is Tucker. Actually, it might have been from McTaggart. I would prefer to probably just take some live at bats and do everything as quickly as possible, as opposed to potentially going on rehab assignment. Tucker said, I'm not going to play the KC series, but we'll look to potentially in Cincinnati or the home stand after that. Like, Kyle Tucker wants to play. Kyle Tucker does not want to go to the minors. The Astros do. The Astros were not very sure if Kyle Tucker needed to go on the trip to Cincinnati, yet Kyle Tucker is there. I think, I don't want to say that there's angst there. I think that's too strong of a word. I think the word that I would use here is I believe that they're disagreeing on the return to play for one Kyle Tucker.
Yeah, and you're right about the rehab, because I was listening to the, I want to say I heard it on their radio broadcast, but I was listening to the radio broadcast and checking on some things where they were basically kind of saying as much without saying it, that he just doesn't want, he didn't want to go to rehab as long as he, and go down to Sugarland. As long as he was taking live hitting in the cages and stuff, he felt like he was ready and that he felt really good. And once he ran the bases, he wanted to get back in there. Maybe that's also part of what we talked about in terms of whether he did it or not. Everybody's looking at him and they're kind of pointing a finger like, why haven't you played yet? To where I think he really wants to get back out there. He feels that too. And he knows the team's in the middle of it. So as long as he feels he's ready, it's not, it's different than the pitching staff, but I'm fine with getting him in the lineup because you just got to see what he's going
to
be.
Yeah. I don't know if that's the right way to do it. Like, is that better than going on a rehab assignment, getting his timing back? I don't know. I think I prefer the rehab assignment route, but I'm not going to die on that tail's heel. Go ahead.
They called three different double-A pitchers up, I think, yeah, in the system, so that one, each day a different guy was throwing to him, I guess, for timing?
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But, like, playing in the game and then having four at-bats, is he going to be playing right field? Is he only going to DH? I think a rehab assignment would do him good. I don't think that Kyle Tucker wants the rehab assignment. He's flat-out basically said it, and you've had Dana Brown say for 3 months that they're going to put him on a rehab assignment once he's ready to play. And then this one from McTaggart. Tucker said Friday, he said this on Friday, there's a chance he could return to the lineup during the team series in Kansas City, which Monday, off day, tomorrow, Wednesday, Thursday. Espada said the club was still discussing if Tucker would travel with the team to Cincinnati. There's some disagreement here between Kyle Tucker and the Houston Astros, just saying. Now, in the last 2 hours, Chandler Rome of The Athletic has reported that Kyle Tucker did indeed have a fracture of his shin, which comes to a surprise to absolutely nobody. Nobody is surprised that Kyle Tucker actually had a shin fracture.
No, and we kept, you know, scratching our temples and looking at all these, the history of the injury and the length guys are normally out and going, look, you can call it whatever you want. We know how much of an issue we've had between the Astros communications department and the fact that from the medical personnel, we just never know what we don't know. And we're probably never going to be told. So the fact is that it took way, way, way too long for what was built as a bone bruise. But I guess now, after the fact, are they trying? Does this save some kind of face to say, oh, there was actually a fracture? At this point, you know, it's water under the bridge, except for the fact that it's taken just way too long.
The only problem with now saying, okay, it's a bone fracture, I remember when we had the whole conversation of what is this injury really, we looked up the timeline for a bone fracture, and it's less than 3 months usually. Like, I mean, we're talking what bone fractures usually, what, 6 to 8 weeks, so 2 months, and we're now over or just at the three-month mark for Kyle Tucker's injury. So maybe it is a bone fracture, but it still doesn't add up considering the length of time he's been out.
No, I think this was a misdiagnosis, quite frankly. I think the tea leaves tell. Look, I'm not a doctor, although I'll pretend like I'm a doctor. I've been around sports. I've seen injuries. I've been around athletic trainers, et cetera, et cetera. Like, the compound fracture thing is like a four-month injury, like 4 to 6 month injury. He obviously doesn't have that. Like, he's currently running on it. Like, he wouldn't be running on it right now if it was that degree. It's very likely that there was some sort of hairline fracture or like a little crack in the bone, which, as Brian said, 6 to 8 weeks. So we're looking at 3 months where he's like, you know, getting close to playing again. So, yes, I don't think that the timeline adds up. The fact that the Astros are lying about this, okay, that's kind of questionable. That's sus. That's super sus of the Astros to be doing this. But what's worse than lying is incompetence. And that's where I'm at with this Astros training staff. And quite frankly, I'm firing them. I'm firing them this offseason. Even if they're completely innocent in all of this, for the sake of my own peace of mind, I am firing them and trying to go out and hire the best athletic staff that I possibly can hire. Even if they're completely innocent in all of it. And I hate calling for people's jobs. But it's just where you are. And you go down like Kyle Tucker. Luis Garcia's returned to play. Lance McCullers could be a little issue all of his own. There's the Penn Murphy. Like, there's, and there, that's only this year. That's only this year when it comes to those guys. Yordan Alvarez's hands. We never really got an explanation there. Christian Javier, his neck, back, didn't look good. Tommy John. So you go up and down the list how it's been so bizarre with this athletic training staff that I'm to the point you have to find a completely different one, even if they're completely innocent in all of this, for the sake of our own peace of mind, it's time to fire them all.
Yeah, look, I think you can go back to the whole diagnosis and the questions in the Chandler Rome with Verlander. You can go back and you can look at all the different guys. Obviously, the McCullers stuff drove me nuts for how long it all took, and then he eventually had surgery anyway, and all of the different quotes that were coming out and things about that. But at a certain point, when you know that you – and you see teams do this all the time, whether you reassign trainers and guys on the staff, or you just go and find, depending on who you want to point the ultimate finger at, when this kind of thing happens, and it happens – this frequently with this many players, you are in your right mind and also can deflect a little bit of all the missteps when you just finally decide to hit the reset button and go, look, we got to do something different than we've done before. The Texans went through this years ago with the fact that they were just having way too many injuries and way too many things were coming back to them and their staff, and they shuffled the deck and they reassigned some guys. They got rid of some guys. They did things a little differently. At a certain point, no matter how much you use the word discomfort, there comes a time when you've got to figure things out how to do it better. And it doesn't even matter about the message you're delivering to the fans and to the media. It's about doing it better for the sake of the team and the players, because there's no way Kyle Tucker, with this amount of time missed, like you said, could ever been, we would ever have believed that it was what they were telling us it was.
And the other like thing that I would look at in terms of incompetence, whenever I talk, because that's a big word. That's a big word to say that they are incompetent. Like, looking at how you treat fractures of the leg, whether it's a hairline fracture, which is a 6 to 8 week injury, whether it's like a more severe fracture, which is 4 to 6 months. Like, do we believe Kyle Tucker has a 4 to 6 month injury fracture of his leg if he's about to return to baseball? No, it's been 3 months, so it's probably a hairline fracture, which is 6 to 8 weeks. Now, the bone bruise could have lasted 3 months. It could have been both injuries, of course. But how do you handle the fracture of a leg? You're going to probably put it in a cast, right? Do you ever remember seeing Kyle Tucker in a cast?
No.
Kyle Tucker was in the stinking dugout 3 days later, limping onto the field to celebrate a walk-off.
Didn't they put him in a walk-off
boot right away?
He was walking around with a broken leg? That's why I think that there's some incompetence here. If it's a hairline fracture of your stinking shin, you're not going to be, you shouldn't be walking around, right, even in a walking boot. Even in a walking boot. That thing should be casted up. You should be on crutches, which they told us he was in crutches on the first day, and then they didn't place him on the injured list right away. And then like 3 days later, Julia Morales is given a dugout report that Kyle Tucker's off of crutches 3 to 4 days after taking one off the shin that they're now telling us was a fracture. You wouldn't have been off of crutches if it was a fracture. That's how I know this thing was misdiagnosed.
Yeah, you know another way to know this was misdiagnosed. I remember going through the timeline of like when the injury, all the different reports they gave us. I remember towards the end of June, there was a 3 day period where we got an update from Joe Espada that he was running on a treadmill. Then 3 days later, they told us he wasn't running. At what point, if it was a bone fracture, why would you be running on it and have all these reports about running on it about 3 to 4 weeks into the injury?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, basically, with whatever he was told, the do's and the don'ts weren't, whatever he was doing, whatever they felt comfortable relaying to us, now looks like it added to the injury. It added to the extent. It added to the time he was out. It's why everybody kept pointing the finger and guessing and basically had every right to say, you gave us all these deadlines. You're missing all these deadlines. He was coming along. You anticipated he was going to play in Anaheim 3 days after the injury. 3 months later, you're scratching your temple going, well, we think it could be like about the 10th day of September. It was a complete debacle, and they should be wearing all of this. Yeah,
I don't know that it 100% added to the injury, like timeline, to the injury timeline. Because, I mean, bone bruises can potentially have a 3 to 4 month return. That's in play. It's in play that a bone bruise can cause you to miss 3 to 4 months of activity. So I don't know that the fracture added to the timeline of him being available. It might have. But I don't think you can answer it one way or the other.
But I would say that if it was, if you were hell bent and you were dead sure that it was a bruise,
mm-hmm.
then they're going to analyze. You're going to give them the instructions. You're going to give the players going to be totally different to the training staff than it is if there's a fracture. Because to Brian's point, you're not going to be running on a treadmill. You're not going to be pounding on it. Now they do. They have those every. Team now has access to those weightless in water where you can run without putting weight on your foot and your leg to get the cardio in. But even still, yeah. That's what he would be doing. He wouldn't be on a legit treadmill.
I don't even think he's doing that with a crack. Not in the bone.
Right.
Like, you're going to heal that thing before you're doing
that
any sort of activity.
That was the report, though, around June 28th that he had run on a treadmill.
That's why it was a misdiagnosis. Like, I think there's a lot of clues to the fact they didn't think it was broken. Which, look, I've broken my leg before that the break didn't show up in the initial imaging. And I went a week later. I was like, this thing doesn't feel right. And I went a week later after the swelling had gone down a bit. And they're like, oh, yeah, there is a crack there. So, like, that's not the crazy part of it. The crazy part of it, it seems like they were already trying to get him to return to play whenever he had the bone bruise for like that initial week. Like they're medical experts. They should know, hey, we might not have seen a crack yet, but let's get the swelling down and in a week. Maybe there is going to be a crack that we discover. The fact that they didn't place him on the injured list, a clue. The fact that he wasn't in any sort he was never in a cast because we saw him in the dugout. We saw him in the dugout walking around. The fact that he wasn't in a cast, clue. The fact that he was off of crutches in a few days, a clue that this was a misdiagnosis. The treadmill, a clue. Like, there are so many things that prove that they didn't realize that he had a fracture initially, and at some point they found out he did have the fracture, who knows when, and they were covering it up the whole time. Why? Because I think they're trying to cover up their incompetence.
I think you're right, because like I said, I've told you guys, when I had what they didn't know in my foot, which turned out they said to me, I had a walking boot on because they said they couldn't see on any x-rays, two x-rays and MRIs, any kind of hairline fracture, but they said it could still be deeply within the bone. It just doesn't show up. But I was down for 3 months. And at the same time, obviously I'm not an athlete and I'm not Kyle Tucker, but the one thing that they for sure said was stay off of it. No matter what you do, stay off of it. I was in crutches with a walking cast. And they said, whatever you do, don't be putting any pressure. You're not walking. You're not running. You're not doing anything. You're certainly not on a treadmill. And you're not certainly not doing the things seemingly that he was doing just days after the initial injury.
Yeah, I just Googled when he was on the treadmill. And the earliest report of it was June 28th. So sometime probably, 3 weeks after the shin contusion, he's running on a treadmill.
That's ridiculous.
So June 3rd, he had a shin contusion. He's running on a treadmill no later than June 20. That's 25 days. You're not going to be running on a treadmill with a hairline fracture after 25 days. You're just not.
Yeah, so either that report was a lie, or they had no idea what type of injury he had.
Yeah, they probably found out it was some sort of fracture after this report. Probably sometime in July.
Because there were reports coming out about how they're kind of frustrated with the progress. If you remember sometime in July, I think it was from the Astros. They were disappointed about the progress that was coming along with the injury, wondering why it wasn't progressing faster. That's probably around the time they figured out, oh, this isn't a bone bruise. This is a fracture.
But, and I just point out, again, God forbid that maybe it was initially something that could have been a bone bruise, but because of all the compound pressure and pounding that he was putting on it, doing what they said was okay, that's maybe why it turned into what it turned into, the fracture.
Yeah, you could be onto something there. Like that, it wasn't healed enough to really take on that sort of compression, that maybe it did materialize into some sort of fracture, which again would point to incompetence. Like it might not be a misdiagnosis in that theory, but it does point to incompetence. So I'm either looking at incompetence for a misdiagnosis or your theory, incompetence for putting pressure on him and that it led to a fracture, which is even worse. That's even worse.
You know as well as I do, being around all the athletes that we've been around, the medical staff in most institutions and professional organizations, they're going to border on doing the utmost on the side of caution to make sure this injury is healed and handled appropriately.
Yeah.
The last thing that they are going to do is say, you know what, regardless of what situation the team's in, you know what, tough it out. It'll be fine. It'll still heal on its own. Go ahead and run on a treadmill and get ready as quick as you can. They're not going to do that.
Either theory is a fireable offense.
Without question.
And this is, to me, this is the straw that breaks the camel's back. You've had so many other instances of this. You've had the return to play policy since James Click. James Click was roasted for his return to play, and he was talking about how we're going to have to reassess our return to play. It's time for a new training staff. Even if it's at minimum for peace of mind. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. We'll get your thoughts on it if you want. Astros don't play until 6:05 today. And with the Astros, they're talking about going to a five-man rotation. They have two off days in a matter of 7 days, so they're looking to go to a five-man rotation. They're talking about Ronel Blanco being the guy that's not going to be in that five-man rotation. So how do you use Ronel Blanco over the next week if he is that odd man out, which we all assume he's going to be, if they go to a five-man rotation, which we all assume they're going to do? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
We're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Jorm on Twitter, you guys keep saying Astros at 6. They're playing right now. No, they're not. They're not playing right now. They're playing, and they're not. They don't play at 6 either. They play at 6:05 is what we're saying. Astros play at 6:05. Hope Verlander doesn't have control issues. 713-780-3776. Speaking of the Astros rotation, there's been talks of them going to a five-man rotation for a week and then going back to the six-man rotation after the week just because of the way the schedule lays out. They have an off day tomorrow, then they have an off day next Monday, and then they play like the rest of their games consecutively. They might have an off day, you know, one or two the rest of the way. So five-man, it looks like, for this week until next Tuesday when it looks like they'll go back to a six-man. They've all but said that it's going to be Ronel Blanco who they skip in the rotation. How do you use Ronel Blanco if he does get skipped in the rotation?
Here's the thing, Jeremy. The more I thought about this, the more I think that the best way to use Ronel Blanco is to not use Ronel Blanco. He's thrown a ton of innings. And the fact is, if you're going to go back to the sixth man at a certain point to where you're going to need him stretched out, then we know that they keep saying they're watching his innings extra closely. We know the fact that he's thrown more innings than he ever has in his pitching career. And you know you're going to need him as a key component to your pitching staff no matter where you use him in the playoffs. So if this is the chance for him to catch a break, yeah, he can do a bullpen session. Yeah, he can do the things so that he stays stretched out. But if you don't have to use him, then you don't have to use him. If there is a chance for long relief, you can use him. But to me, because of the fact that you're going to need him again in the sixth man after this stretch, as you mentioned, then I would just say give him a little break, give his arm a little rest, you know, keep it fresh, but don't have him do anything to be taxed on the arm. And then hopefully he comes back with a little bit more in the tank when he comes back ready to go for the sixth man.
I don't hate it. I would be okay with it, quite frankly. Now, I would prefer to see him have like a bullpen day mixed in there because now you're going like 10 days without a start. I think that that's too much without a start for a big league pitcher in the middle of a stretch drive that is the second best ERA in the American League. So I'm good with the fact that he would be the guy that doesn't get a start in this week, this one trip through the rotation. You know, Verlander might be your worst of these six starters, but you're certainly not kicking Verlander out to the bullpen. I would have a very, hey, Ronel Blanco, you're going to pitch an inning or two, probably just an inning. You're going to pitch an inning in this game on this date, no matter what. So just be ready for that. It's going to be a tune-up outing. It's going to be basically your bullpen, and then here's your next start whenever we go to the six-man rotation. That's what I would do.
I meant. Do your normal, you can throw, you can keep your arm fresh, you can do your bullpen, as you mentioned. Maybe you do your bullpen on the day you're going to throw, and you do it closer to the time where, you know, you start it at the time when maybe a game starts or something, so you're heated up, you're warm, and then you can go in and get an inning in before you get out. But regardless, and if you're going to use them at all, it would seem to me that ideally it would be in a Verlander start, because he's not there yet, he's not completely stretched out, he's not where he normally is, no matter where he is in his career, in terms of how many innings he can give you. So that's a possibility of a piggyback there, as Verlander continues to try and, you know, pitch back into shape. But other than that, I'm totally good with him just taking this week off and getting ready for the stretch run.
I mean, Ronel Blanco is already 20 innings past his previous career high. And we've seen studies and reports that indicate when guys get to around 40 or 50 innings pitched past their previous high, that's when, you know, the arm problems creep in. And maybe the Astros aren't concerned about that because he's a 30-year-old pitcher who doesn't factor into the long-term plans. But you figure he's going to have at least a couple more starts before the regular season's over, maybe a start or two in the playoffs. So 20 innings could easily turn into, you know, 35, 40 innings past his career high, and that's a dangerous, dangerous territory. So to me, yeah, I would second and third you guys' plan. Have him throw an inning, like a set inning. He's not coming in during the middle of it. He's coming in a clean inning, seventh, eighth, whatever, on a set day where he can plan and prepare for it, and let that be it until they return the six-man rotation.
I have a hard time seeing him get a playoff start.
I agree.
Yeah, it would be tough. I'm just saying you got to factor in that he would pitch in the postseason too.
Yeah, but some injury capacity. Maybe. Well, and for that.
Guys, this might be the precursor to what he does in the postseason by setting him up a little bit to say, if you are going to use him during this week, kind of try and use him in maybe a situation where he might be used in the playoffs coming out of the bullpen. Like you said, Brian, probably best to keep him starting fresh, a fresh inning, not coming in. But then, you know, how does that translate to how you get ready and what you go through different than when you start? And use it as like a little mini dress rehearsal, just if that's the way you're going to use him and he truly is the guy that's not going to get a start, one of two, then at least he's had a little experience with
Yeah, I think that'd be good. Why not? Like, why not give him a little bit of a taste of that? Because I think that will be his role.
Mm-hmm.
Knock on wood, should you A, make the playoffs, should you B, not have injury, should Verlander not be washed.
That's a lot of knocking on wood.
Verlander not be washed. It's that time of year. We're in September now. You got to knock on a lot of wood in September.
I think we can be confident they're going to make the playoffs at this point. Can we not? I, as the most pessimistic person on the show, at least
in
terms of the Astros, Brian Graf is up to around 90% right
now.
The odds
are in their
favor. I'm almost locking it in.
The odds were really against them when they were 12-24, and here we are. So there's still a chance.
Six-game lead with less than a month left.
I know. Anything can happen. I don't like to get the
well, that's why I'm not going to put it at 100%. I'll settle at 90, but I'm very confident right now.
Yeah. Yeah. You were not that confident a couple weeks ago.
No. About a month ago, I was at 15%. So yeah,
the twitch
has
come
a long way.
Poncho has that notepadded and keeps quoting it, which is going to be on Bad Take Boulevard the first Thursday after the regular season.
I mean, the fact that they're in the situation where they have the luxury of being able to take a guy, and you mentioned Jeremy, where his ERA still is, the worst start of the year was the one where he got dinged by the umpiring staff about the sticky stuff in the glove. But for the most part, he hasn't even had the big blow-ups like we've seen Arrigetti and Brown go through. He's been really, really good, and you have the luxury to be able to sit him down. You're nursing Verlander back, and yet you've got five starters that are fully capable, as we just saw, of keeping you in every ballgame.
Rocky, JV looks washed. If it wasn't for his namesake, I'm not sure he's making a playoff roster. I think today's start for him at 6:05 will go a long way in determining our perception of where JV is at. So we'll probably talk about that tomorrow because they play later tonight. 713-780-3776. If this Astros team goes on to win it all, is it a greater Cinderella story than the 95 Rockets? Cinderella story. 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Trying to rile some people up on Labor Day. 8217, pretending that the Astros game is after your show is so, so lame! Exclamation point. I like riling people up. 713-780-ESPN. If this Astros team, and look, they put their winning streak on the line tonight at 6:05 at Cincinnati. If this Astros team wins it all, is it a greater Cinderella story than the 95 Rockets?
I was thinking about this the other day because of the fact that now all of a sudden all the national media is really coming out of the woodwork to talk about how the odds were stacked against them. And we talked about the percentages of not making the playoffs when they were, you know, double-digit games under 500 and really, really struggling, and the chances to even be a wild card were basically slim and none. And the fact that, you know, much like the season where the Chronicle buried them and said that they were dead and they came back, you know, to make a hell of a run. When you look at this run, if they end up finishing the deal and coming from where they came from, there is a case to be made about the ultimate comeback story and Cinderella story, much like the lowest seed ever to win the NBA title in the Rockets. The difference is going to be, or at least where the comparisons could be really zeroed into, is going to be when you start talking about the opponents as they get closer and closer to winning it. Because that was, I think, as much as the Rockets were a six seed going in, the big thing was knocking off the 1 and 2 seeds basically in their conference and then the 1 seed in the East to get there. They were beating the best of the best every round. You don't know how it's going to line up for the playoffs, but I think that it could be kind of similarly looked at if they end up finishing this deal.
I have a really hard time calling the Astros a Cinderella story. Very difficult time. It's a team that's been to 7 straight ALCSs, 2 World Series in the Golden Era, have been to 4 since 2017. That, to me, doesn't qualify as a Cinderella story type of team. Rockets, I think you can in 95 because they were the 8 seed. That said, they were the defending champions. So, like, I have a difficult time calling the Rockets in 95 a Cinderella story, but the 8 seed story I can give you there. I don't think there's any 6 seed, yeah, the lowest seed to ever win the title. But defending champions. The Astros is a Cinderella story? I can't buy that.
Okay, if it's semantics of the description of it, you're right. You mean from the standpoint of reputation and the 7 straight ALCSs and all the things they've accomplished, they weren't just coming onto the scene, but basically everybody had written them off. I mean, the fact that they started so horribly, you know, everybody was dancing on their grave and basically calling this, you know, a wash season and that, you know, just start planning for next season. I don't think anybody in their right mind saw this turnaround coming to this degree, to where now, I think this is the first month since October of last year that they've been in first place, sole possession of first place to start a month. The fact that, you know, this whole season has been just an uphill climb to get where they've gotten to. Now, if they could actually take it all the way to the finish line, yeah, maybe not a Cinderella story, but, you know, basically bucking the odds to do what they've done, yeah, where everybody didn't give them any chance of even making the playoffs.
I think it's more turnaround, because I think that this team has a lot in common with the 2004 Astros, that you know, they buried them. I mean, Fred Fowler buried them. You put the tombstone on the front cover of the sports page when they were 15-30, and then they responded and had a very, very, you know, good season and almost, you know, fell one game shy of getting to the World Series. This, to me, has more in common with that. And I'll call it more of a turnaround than Cinderella. Because, I mean, at the start of the year, the Astros were a popular team to go to the World Series. They're a popular team to, you know, make a deep postseason run. They're a popular team to win the AL West. Cinderella, I think, more of a no one expected them to be there, and then all of a sudden they're there. That's why I have a hard time doing it with the Rockets, too, in 95, because they were the defending champions.
They were, but they completely retooled their roster with their second best player.
Yeah, they had it with Clyde, though. Like, I mean, you bring in a Clyde Drexler, who's a Hall of Famer, to pair him with an Akeem Olajuwon. Like, that's not a Cinderella story.
They thought it was a desperation move because they thought they basically
were but desperation
done.
Isn't Cinderella. Like, Cinderella's no, like the unexpected, so then, you know, that came out of nowhere and then all of a sudden is here. Like, I don't know if a two Hall of Fame type of team can be that, or two Hall of Fame players on the same team can be that.
Like, baseball, to me, obviously they didn't actually hold on and win the title, but to me, a Cinderella story would have been if the Diamondbacks had won the title last year. Because they were picked probably, what, third in the division last year. They were not expected to do much. They only got into the playoffs with sub 90 wins last year. Obviously surprised everyone by getting past the top teams in the NL like the Dodgers, and you know, got to the World Series against the Rangers. I believe won 2 games against the Rangers. So that to me would have been a true Cinderella team. I mean, yeah, 7 straight ALCSs. You're in Game 7 last year. If you win a home game against the Rangers, you're in the World Series again. So it's tough to call that team a Cinderella.
Right. And so, regardless, it would be one of the most amazing stories in baseball, though, to say that a team that was basically this far under 500, that was written off by just about everybody, would not only get back to respectability, get back to the playoffs, win the division right now.
Certainly unexpected.
Yeah, do all these things. And then if you can take it to that level, I mean, I think that there's a special place to be notated about, regardless of whether it was Cinderella or not, a team that far down to finish that far on top is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I would consider it one of the greater turnarounds that we've seen in baseball history, and I think that's the premise. And it would be that. It would be, like, I mean, the start of the year, the people were talking about it, too, were like the Astros would have to be since the, 1920 Braves or whatever year it was, or they would have to do something that the Tombstone Astros did in the early 2000s. Yeah, if they do win it all, it would be one of the greater turnarounds we've seen in baseball history. I just don't think anybody's calling the 24 Astros a Cinderella.
I think the other thing, too, is when you look at it, it's kind of like the details that go within it, too. From a national perspective, we always talk about the people that aren't watching them too closely or watching the games. Yeah, they see the wins and losses. They now see where they're at. But when you start going through the laundry list of what they had to overcome in terms of all the injuries and the different things that they've had to overcome, from the pitching staff to Kyle Tucker to, you know, to all the different ways that they've had to kind of reinvent themselves, picking up a Ben Gamble, getting these young guys to not only be on the roster but contribute, I think that when you start factoring all those bullet points in, it does become a remarkable story in terms of what all the ways that they were able to kind of persevere to get to a level that no one gave them a chance to get to.
Absolutely. Just don't think I could use the word Cinderella. Like, I Googled the top Cinderella stories ever, and the one that would come to mind for me would be like...
Miracle on Ice.
I got the one I don't want to
upset.
Mention for you.
The Buster Douglas would be up there for me.
NC State.
Yeah, I didn't want to see.
NC State would be up there. Villanova. Yeah, Villanova.
Oh, the Villanova Georgetown one for sure. That's where they did like the slow down four corners and beat Ewing.
Like
they were an eight seed, weren't they?
It's usually a team that's super outseeded, a low seed that shocks and a high seed. That's the Cinderella.
Yeah, my bad on the wrong terminology, but just the fact that from an overall standpoint of doing something that I don't want to say it's unheard of, but it was so unlikely and everybody had written them off to such a high degree that I think at a certain point you got to give them more flowers than maybe they've gotten already in terms of being able to overcome all of that, all of the injuries, and then be able to put the icing on the cake and actually try and win it all.
Yeah, it's been a good turnaround, no doubt about it.
But
if they got swept in the wild card series, no one's going to be like super happy about it, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If they don't get one of the top two seeds, and then like you had this great turnaround, and then you go play whoever you play in a wild card series, and you're 2-Q, I don't think anybody's looking at the year as a remarkable year. So you have to put that storybook ending on it.
Yeah, but if you are able to see it through, I think that's where. Yeah, you say you can use the term of like unheard of. You can say that, you know, because that's not supposed to happen. And then with all the different, kind of like I said, the bullet points that go with it, I think that should have a special place in the lore of baseball on top of this golden era of Astros baseball, regardless of the Astros or anybody else.
I still think I'd put the 95 Rockets ahead of the Astros. I mean, we'll see if the Astros actually finish it off. But not only were the Rockets a 6 seed, but you're talking about beating 360-plus win teams, and the fourth team you beat was still 50-plus.
But they were never not going to make the playoffs. They were never, like, far under 500.
6 seed, I don't know how close they were with 6-9, but, I mean, as a 6 seed, you're not that far away.
Yeah,
you're closer to out than you are to the top.
They were going to be in the playoffs. They were always 6-7-8. They were going to be in the playoffs. They made the trade at the All-Star break just to try and reset the deck because there was a desperation within. And then Clyde turned out, and they struggled the rest of the regular season to kind of get a rhythm. And then when they got in the playoffs, they just turned it on.
Yeah, Denver, that was the year that Denver, I don't know if they actually, that wasn't the year that they shocked them. Denver finished 8th that year, 41-41. Rockets were 47-35.
Denver knocked off Seattle.
They were 6 games clear of them. No, Denver didn't. That was
the year.
The year
before? Yeah, Denver got swept by San Antonio. They didn't have to face Seattle because Denver knocked them out.
Looks like it was the year before. But Denver was an 8 seed, the 94-95. So they were 6 games clear of the 8 seed. Yeah, it was the year before.
Yeah, they were in. So that's the difference where the Astros looked like they weren't even going to get in.
Yeah.
But you know, you're like, to Jeremy's point, I also, you know, in the Astros got, you know, they've been to 7 straight ALCSs. No one was going to be shocked because if they win it, because they're still in this middle of this window. The Rockets coming off of a championship, people still thought, you know, a defending champion should get there and they should do something. But to do what they did, and like you said, Brian, that's the biggest thing, going through the seeds they went through to get crowned, that you can't paint a tougher picture that they got through.
No, because, I mean, even though the Astros, theoretically, if they get in, will have to go through higher seeds, to me, the names you have to go through in the AL don't match up to Stockton, Malone, Barkley, David Robinson MVP, and then either Shaq and Penny or Jordan had the Magic not knocked off the Bulls. I mean, sure, Aaron Judge, there's a big names in the American League, but you've owned the Yankees. The Orioles are new in town. You've pretty much beat them, at least in the regular season. You haven't faced them in the postseason. So the threatening names, the imposing names you'd have to go through don't really match up for me for the Astros compared to the Rockets.
It's not the same gauntlet as the Rockets went through. You're right. But and again, you can't criticize the Astros if the other teams don't get there, because Keith from LA knows better than anybody. You can be a phenomenal regular season team and then crap the bed all over the place and not even get there, so that you're supposed to face the best team in the National League.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Astros looking to get their seventh win in a row. They'll be in action in Cincinnati at 6:05 tonight. I believe. What do you believe coming off the college football weekend? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, before we go to the break, a word from MyBookie.ag. We know MyBookie.ag is always here for you, and you can be ready to cash in because football is back, baby. We know it. College football back. You got pro football Thursday, Friday, and Sunday, and Monday. All the action, all the time, and always a chance to put money down at mybookie.ag. They have all the promotions, like weekly risk-free boosts on Thursdays, where you can bet without a sweat. If your bet hits, you win big. If it doesn't, forget it. MyBookie is going to refund your wager. That's what I'm talking about. MyBookie also giving away hundreds of thousands in prizes with their Super Survivor and Square contests. Join now for your shot at huge cash rewards. Get it all started right now. MyBookie.ag, place to be. Always use our promo code BET975. That'll give you a chance to claim some extra bank on your first deposit. Your initial deposit, depending on what you put in, they'll put money on top of it up to $1,000. MyBookie's bonus options make it easy to deposit as well with crypto and with credit cards. The bigger your deposit, the bigger that bonus is. And check out all the new loyalty programs with MyBookie Plus. The more you play, the more you win. It's simple. Climb through tiers of the Loyalty Rewards program, unlock even more epic promotions, exclusive giveaways, and, of course, bigger rewards. MyBookie Plus, it's the lock of the century. Do what I always tell you to do. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere. With the only place I tell you to do it, it's mybookie.ag, and always use that promo code BET975.
ESPN 97.5.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.